This is CliffCentral.com.
This show contains adult content. If you find it offensive, please go to the CliffCentral.com website where there's a show for you.
CliffCentral.com. It is Friday morning. This is Sex Talk. This is Unradio. This is Unscripted. And this is, without a doubt, unsaid. Are you breaking things already?
Yeah.
Just stop being such an Israeli. I mean, that's a terrible thing to say.
So tie me up.
You'd like that.
I'd like that. Why am I so loud?
I don't know. Well, excuse me.
I just answered it. Okay, I'm going to sit here.
Okay.
I'm going to tie myself up and be quiet.
But if nobody else will tie you up, you'll tie yourself
up. You'd like that. One of those people, you find them like, yeah, hitting themselves, you know.
Yeah, self-flagellation. If nobody else will do it, I'll do it myself. That's what we have two hands for. If nobody else will do it, I'll do
it. Self-pleasuring?
There we go. I will do it for myself.
Hi, John T.
And with us this morning is a special friend, Jean-Francois Sobieski. Good morning, John, and thank you for being with us. That's really
cool.
John T. So you've got to talk really close to the mic.
Yes.
Okay, very cool.
Great to be here.
Who has a big title.
It's yes.
An awesome word, a phytoalchemist. So you're going to tell us what a phytoalchemist
is. Like a dirty dictionary.
Absolutely. Yeah, well, but first, no. Wait. You can't rush things here. There is an order to do things. Sex has an order. Problem is when it's the same order all the time.
The order is in the disorder.
That's it. Which is actually, there's this whole new thing in quantum theory that order is in the disorder. And there is more weird stuff in the universe than you think.
Really?
And if you think there's more weird stuff in the universe, just spend more time with people and you will realize there is more fucking weird stuff in people.
That's the weirdest.
That
That's
gets
for
weirder
sure.
all the time. Mm. So, if you want to know about phytoalchemy and you have comments and questions, WhatsApp us on 079-748-2090, sextalk at Cliff Central on Twitter, and we're all over wherever else we are. But first, let's see if anybody's smart.
Ninja sex.
Chocolate starfish.
Twitter bag. Philippa GM.
Today's dirty dictionary word is
ithyphallic.
Dirty dictionary word.
Ithyphallic. Tomorrow.
Well, phallic, I know.
Phallic, you know.
Yeah, because.
Well.
Yeah, well. Well, actually, when I was traveling India. They explained to me that everything is Shiva.
Shivalingam.
Lingam. Or, you know, Parvati, I think. So it's like the feminine, the yin and the yang. So they said whenever you see something weird popping up from the ground, it's kind of a temple to the lingam, to the male erection of, you know, the male force of creation. So phallic, I know, but the beginning of the word, I don't.
Okay. That's fine.
Okay.
We will get there. Hmm. Any idea what ithyphallic is?
Ithy.
Ithy. I-T-H-Y.
Maybe something it's ether.
Isn't that something to do with birds? No, probably wrong.
No. Ichthy is ichthy. Fish.
Okay. Ichthy is fish.
Right. Ichthy is fish. Right. So it's not about fish phallus.
If you get turned on by fish, where is the fish cock?
Where is the fish cock?
How do fish go?
Well, generally what happens is that the male sprays his sperm into the water.
And she goes...
No, she doesn't, because you cannot get pregnant from eating sperm.
No, maybe fish can.
And do you know what fish
maybe
sperm...
Maybe that's why they smell
fishy. Do you
know what
fishy. Fish sperm is called?
How?
What? Milt.
Milt.
M-I-L-T.
Okay.
That's what fish
so
sperm
smart.
Is called.
Okay. So he just
I know, lots
it.
Of useless things.
You know also very useful things. And then what happens?
That's about as far as I remember.
She goes, she has great Kegel muscles. She has great.
Well, no, because then I think all of the conception happens outside of her body. It doesn't happen inside of her body.
I saw seahorses mate lately, and for some reason it looked kind of hot.
Seahorse porn. Do you know who would watch seahorse porn?
Who?
Levinson.
Well, the way he looks today, I must be honest, if he's not going for a funeral, I'd marry him. I'll just, you know, it's just this is like Levinson is smart. From the comedy show.
So if you know a little bit more about what actually happens once the male has sprayed his milt into the water, please message us and let us know. 0797482090. We'd love to hear.
And if you think that fish, reproduce, having sex is hot, let us know as well.
Absolutely. Yeah. And, okay, I'm not going anywhere near where my mind is going.
Well, Jonty, I think whales do it at deep depths.
Deep water.
Deep water.
Yeah. Well, whales are mammals, so whales are closer to what we do. Yeah.
They get tall.
Yeah.
Do they need cold water? They need nice and cold. It's the opposite of women. We need nice and hot.
Some women like, I'm sure there's a fetish for cold. We will look it up.
There is, and it's nice, as you say, to use some ice or some different elements.
One of the new things we're doing on Facebook every week is we're posting a question.
Okay. Who's answering it?
Thursday is question day. Okay. Tuesday is a quote.
Okay.
From some of my articles and from some other people.
So it's inspirational Tuesday.
And Thursday is a question. And this week's question was, if you have a block of ice in your partner's body, where would you start?
Mm. Mm. So, yeah.
So, if you would like to tell us where you start, WhatsApp us. We would love to know.
Where would you start?
Absolutely. Where would you start? Okay. Nipples. What is a phytoalchemist? I love the word alchemy.
Yeah.
And I've been thinking a lot about sexual alchemy this week. So phytoalchemy is our plant alchemist.
Yeah.
What does that actually mean in real terms?
No, it does sound a little bit like, like a fighter.
You need to be quiet and let the man
speak. A fighting alchemist.
Well,
okay.
I'm excited to be able to talk about the
you just need to pull the mic a little bit closer.
Intersection between plants, consciousness, and sexuality. I mean, it's a fascinating topic that you don't hear much of usually. But phyto comes from the Greek word meaning plants. So it's basically plant alchemy. And it's a word that's...
So you need to explain a little bit of alchemy because it's this wonderful word.
So basically, this word came up in my own journey of alchemizing my own life. I've got healers in my family and I'm not sure this thing's working, but yeah,
it's
is
working.
It right?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Okay. Absolutely.
So I've been on a process a lot of my life in terms of alchemizing myself and healing, learning who I am and healing myself.
So alchemy is the process of transformation and transmutation.
Transmuting one thing to the other.
Yeah.
And so in this case, phytoalchemy describes the role of plants in my own life, especially visionary plants like ayahuasca, but also herbs and medicinal plants.
See, we are everywhere.
I've been attracted to my whole life because I learned when I looked at my ancestry, I learned that there were herbalists in my family, my grandmother's side.
Mm. Okay.
So this attraction I've always had to plants, I came up with the word plant alchemy because the plants have helped me to transform illness into wellness.
Okay.
And this is what I teach people. I teach people how they can use plants, medicinal plants, psychoactive plants, which are any plants that affect the nervous system, to transform themselves in terms of self-development.
Yeah. Mind-boggling.
So the fascinating thing, and this has been quite a big thing for me lately that I've been aware of, is how disconnected we've become from nature and from the earth. And I think it creates in a lot of people this really deep loss. But it's on an incredibly deep level of disconnection.
It's one of the casualties, as I see it, of the consumer culture. Mm. What I often do in my workshops and in my seminars is that I give a picture of the chocolate tree, the cacao tree, and I say, "Well, what is this?" And most people don't know what it is, and it's a magical tree. The pods actually grow directly from the stem, from the bark.
From
the main plant,
not from the branch.
Yeah, and even the flowers come from the main the main trunk of the tree.
Looking now for an image to tweet for
so,
you.
Yeah, so we've done some beautiful cacao ceremonies with dance.
Yes.
And that really is awesome with Christos from Biodanza.
Yes, yes. So one of my speciality interests in the plant world is psychoactive plants. So psychoactive plants, most people don't really know what it's about. They're sometimes associated with being, what is it, something about craziness or, you know, whatever. But psychoactive means any plant that affects how you think, feel, and act.
Mm.
And one of the things that I like to share about is that a lot of the foods that we eat and plant foods that we eat, it's like chocolate, like coffee, they are psychoactive. So there's basically a grade, shades of psychoactivity from what I call subtle psychoactive things like chocolate.
It just kind of lifts your mood a little bit.
So there's actually a free video on my website that I do an introduction on psychoactive plants. Cannabis and cacao and rooibos even rooibos crosses the red pigments in rooibos. It's fascinating. I read this paper by Anna Yager, who's a pharmacologist, who showed that the pigments in rooibos, those red pigments, flavonoids, actually cross the blood-brain barrier and exert a direct relaxing effect on your nervous system. So you're actually doctoring yourself when you drink rooibos. You're relaxing yourself.
I don't like rooibos.
It's very good for the heart also.
I don't like so,
it. John's you
get,
so cute.
Yeah, you get some
like
people
it.
Who love it and some
it's okay.
People
he
who
does a lot of other good things. So it's okay. It's being excused.
So we have to go somewhere else because we're starting with something specific.
So, you know what? So I can say that plants are my passion.
Yes.
And their ability to heal. So basically, I'm a healer. I studied ethnobotany at UJ, which
so
is
so you actually
study.
Have a science background.
Yes.
Okay.
BSc botany zoology. Even though most of the time I was in the library reading up about fly agaric mushrooms and all these interesting
psychoactive
plants. But the ethnobotany field.
Wait. What are fly agaric mushrooms? Because I know a little bit about mushroom, but I've never heard of fly agaric.
So fly agarics was the first. It's not a plant. It's a mushroom, of course, but it was the first organic substance that captured my fascination. It was in the public library. There were books on all these hard drugs, you know.
Yeah.
And then I saw mushrooms and I thought, what's mushrooms doing amongst these guys? So I read this book, and what I understood is the toadstool, the red and white toadstool, is a very sacred inebriant and a sacred psychoactive used in Siberia by the Koryak tribes for shamanic healing, for spiritual healing. So I started to become fascinated by this toadstool, and I learned everything there was to know about its chemistry. What I did find out, and just so that everybody knows, you know, not to go and just pick now the toadstools from the garden, there are different types, they're what are called ecotypes of these mushrooms.
Mm-hmm.
The ones that are in Siberia were used to give incredible strength and shamanic, incredible out-of-body experiences, shamanic journeying. But the ones around the rest of the world often are very, they can cause you a lot of, you know, they
can be very
toxic in terms of getting sick and not having the same properties. So I wouldn't advocate on just picking anyone's. But this opened up the door for me in terms of understanding the role of psychoactive plants in consciousness.
Wow. So I want to tell you a story, and then we have to go into what we were talking about, which is this connection of this morning is aphrodisiacs.
Absolutely. Yeah.
So I'm going to tell you two things. First, I'm going to tell you my greatest aphrodisiac, Chantal.
And that's not. Don't try to look for her or it in the shops. It's one of a kind. One woman.
That is my aphrodisiac. Full stop. In a way that I have never experienced before.
That is so beautiful.
Said Chantal told me a really interesting story last night.
Hmm?
The origin of Christmas and Father Christmas. Ah, now you, from that smile, I think you might know the same story.
Yes, that's
in Russia, what used to happen was that they would go out and they would pick psychedelic mushrooms.
Yeah.
And they would use these to decorate the trees.
Mm-hmm.
And that was the beginning of the decoration of Christmas trees.
That's right.
And then what would happen was, because it was all snowed in, all of the houses had trap doors on the roofs. Because there was so much snow and they needed ways to be able to get up and out sometimes, where the doors would often be snowed in. Are you getting the idea here? Somebody would come in through the roof with a sack of mushrooms. Father Christmas.
And it looks, and you really feel nice after that.
We are getting somewhere.
Yeah. Right.
Okay, so there's this huge myth about plants having this amazing sexual ability.
Hmm.
Oysters, asparagus, right. Cacao.
Okay.
Different for so many people. There's yes. herbs like yeah. jojoba, yohimbe, yeah. mm-hmm. and all of those are supposed mm-hmm. to have these sexual
right.
properties.
Right.
And they've come kind of to the fore in the medical form of Viagra and Cialis and all of that, and everybody's looking for this amazing miracle turn on.
Yes, that's it.
So what's the story with all these plants? I mean, I love oysters.
Yeah, so
it's not a plant, but we love it.
Well, often with the food as medicine, what I've noticed is that, for example, oysters, there's a scientific rationale for its use as an aphrodisiac.
Mm. Okay.
It's got one of the highest zinc, it's one of the highest zinc containing foods.
Oh, wow.
So
why is zinc important,
John T,
especially
that
for men?
When men ejaculate, they lose zinc.
Yes.
So basically, oysters is a really good way to replenish your zinc.
Wow.
Okay.
There it is.
That's the zinc.
That's the scientific rationale of having oysters. And of course, they look very much, they're very fluidy and they look
very sexual.
Sexual in themselves.
And very sensual. The texture.
Yeah,
I love
You can't just chew
oysters.
It and, you know, quick hoy.
So, zinc is essential for the male reproductive essence.
Okay.
You
know?
Mm. So a lot of these plants, so that's foods. And what I look at in food as medicine, having studied this and doing courses on this, is that a lot of the foods contain things that either invigorate the system, you know, stimulate the system. For example, chocolate, cacao, it is a heart stimulant.
Mm-hmm.
And it also is vasodilatory, so it opens the blood vessels so that it lowers your blood pressure.
Okay.
So you feel
you can
more
get horny.
Invigorated.
So vasodilation is really important
it's very
in terms
important.
Of sexual response.
Yep.
One myth that does exist, and I think it's driven by the consumer culture a bit, is that a lot of people think that aphrodisiacs are the stimulatory, excitatory plants and substances that give you endurance and you can last
for
24
or give you an erection
hours.
Or
there are some that work like that, like yohimbine mm-hmm. and a couple of others that do that. But a lot of the aphrodisiacs actually have the opposite effect. They actually relax you so that you can have no stress and that you can make love and be comfortable
and be in the moment.
So in fact, this thing of being driven by the stimulation, actually what I've noticed, it can cause stress of performance stress and
so
you know
cool.
like I have to perform and I have to make it work. That's actually opposite,
because
it's counter
on the tantric massage. Amazing. On the tantric massage courses that we teach, there is so much about how relaxation and arousal are linked.
Yes.
Absolutely.
The more relaxed you are,
absolutely.
The higher
exactly.
the arousal will be.
Exactly.
Because it's also linked to safety.
Yeah.
Right,
relaxation
yeah.
and relaxation yeah. and safety are linked.
That's right.
Because we'll only relax when we feel safe.
And then the parasympathetic system doesn't have to, you know, you're actually getting into the zone of digesting, relaxing, like a lion, you know, getting to that zone of really relaxing and not going hunting, you know.
That's an amazing point because when you get relaxed and you go parasympathetic nervous system, that's when you feel more interconnected.
Mm. Yes.
So there's a connection there between trance states, shamanic rituals. All of those activities take you to that parasympathetic interconnected state.
So the deeper into relaxation you go, ultimately the higher the arousal.
Absolutely. Yeah.
So the plants that are going to help you relax more are?
So something that I love so much, because it even just, it's such an exotic looking plant.
Yeah.
Just the way it looks is just sexual.
Yeah, take notes there.
I'll give you a clue.
Yeah.
So it comes from Malaysia, that kind of side.
Frangipani.
No.
That's my favorite flower, by the way.
It is a beautiful flower. But what they do is they use the Polynesians. They take the flowers and they put them on the wedding bed, you know.
Yeah.
And it's part of the Polynesian culture. And it's ylang ylang.
Ylang ylang, okay.
Because in most in aromatherapy oils, that's considered to be aphrodisiacal.
So ylang ylang has got antidepressant effects.
True.
It's sedative. So it's a classic example of a plant that actually does relax you while it opens you at the same time.
Mm.
And then that leads to incredible arousal. I have a feeling that it also mimics, I'm not sure if this is a fact or not, it mimics hormones.
Okay.
The more I smell it, the more I just have a feeling.
It's almost like a fito,
that it mimics some
So you'd
some
actually,
hormones.
I know what you're saying.
So you actually would need, for this to have impact, you'd need an incredibly high concentrate of it.
Yes,
so like
do.
What you get in aromatherapy essences is a very, very low concentrate.
Yeah. I mean, you get essential oils and you get essential oils. A lot of the essential oils on the market here are not the real deal. Some people take, there is a company that specializes in 100% pure essential oil.
So that would have the impact that you're looking for.
Even the identicals do still have that, but it's... You have a synergy with
So the identicals are more synthetics?
They're not... that you can classify them as synthetic, but they're mimicked to the natural. But of course, there's no comparison between the real... For example, the...
There
like
are
rose.
Whale noises in
yeah.
my ears.
It's drilling, but I was like, maybe it's whales
like
having
whale,
sex.
Yeah, it sounds like whale noises
let's just
somewhere.
Just pretend that there's deep water making love.
Yes.
Yeah. It's a very beautiful flower. It's actually almost
ylang-ylang,
sensual.
Ylang-ylang, yeah.
Oh, ylang-ylang is fantastic.
Yeah. Mm. We're tweeting it now. Okay, so when you smell it, almost it disgusts you and appeals you in the same time. There's something
that's
happening.
About it that's very raw and primal. It just and the way those things work is that they immediately go through the olfactory nerve.
Mm-hmm.
So they stimulate the release of dopamine or serotonin.
Okay.
That's how they actually, the essential oils are probably the quickest acting aphrodisiac. Because as soon as you smell, for example, ylang ylang oil or even rose oil, you immediately feel that upliftment and openness.
Okay.
I mean, you know, even if you smell a mint plant,
yes.
What I've learned through studying is that, and the studies that have been, you know, going into the scientific data, is that mint, when you smell mint and you feel that, often you just feel that refreshed upliftment, there's actually compounds in mint that are antidepressant, that work on the MAO inhibition. It's called monoamine oxidase inhibition. Uh-huh. Similar to the same class of ayahuasca, how ayahuasca works.
So you need that for the uptake of DMT.
Yeah.
You need to go past the
MAO. Different types of MAO inhibition. One is more for, you could say it's collectively antidepressant, which ayahuasca does. That's one of the ways ayahuasca actually heals. One way is through the visions, but then the other way that most people don't realize is that it's uplifts the serotonin very quickly, so that you actually open your heart. You open the heart,
that's why
you feel so, what they call the afterglow effect. It's because your serotonin is raised.
Yeah.
Wow.
Now, I read something really interesting yesterday, was that nobody actually knows how we absorb smell. So the first theory and for a long time was what they called a lock and key theory.
Right.
Was that within us was the lock, and then as we smell the substance, that would come in as the key to open it.
Yes.
But the newest theory is it's actually the vibration of the substance.
Really?
That opens it. So I really like that, because my whole model of working is very much about energy and frequencies.
Yes, of course.
So that kind of really appealed, that it's the vibration of the substance that opens the lock.
Absolutely.
Within the brain.
And I think there's an intersection between that vibrational and the chemicals.
Yeah.
You know, like in ayahuasca, when they sing those magic songs, the Icaros, that in itself is half the healing, half the power of the medicine, is that these songs and the vibrational energy takes you like a technology deeper and deeper into your consciousness.
And you know, when we do like the water massage, which we did this week, which was incredibly deep, and the retreats up in Mozambique, the sea becomes a medium for doing the healing work.
Absolutely.
Just by being in the water and on the water, so much happens that does so much of the work by itself.
Yes. Yeah.
And that blew me away when I realized that. You know, that's not so much the retreat processes that we're doing. It's the whole environment of the beach, of the level of air, of the light, of everything around there. That's the medium that the healing happens
in.
They
say that the ocean actually creates negative ions, which actually has a positive, direct positive effect on the psyche.
Yeah.
That's why people love the ocean.
Opens so much. And then you combine that with the retreat processes that we do, and it becomes amazing. What happens there?
Chanti, it reminds me of like how what we're all talking about is that the senses, the power of the senses to affect healing.
So it's very much that sensual
the senses,
idea.
And you guys are talking about something that connects us. You have mentioned it, that there's something that makes us feel, as we're going through a transformation, not alone.
Right.
But there's something that happens when you open the heart. It's something that actually is supposed to be shared. It's something that you're not necessarily only going through by yourself. So there are healing effects when you're doing things
alone.
You've
got to listen to Tom Chi's talk about how everything is connected.
Yeah.
And that's amazing.
Yeah. I mean, what's the point of just having a heart-opening experience if you've got no one to share?
Yeah. And there's something very healing.
It's
very, very interesting.
Yeah.
Okay.
Asparagus, because that's touted as And I love asparagus as an aphrodisiac.
Even
avos.
I wouldn't say it's too... It's not very excitatory. It's not very relaxing. But one plant that I would say is like the archetypal aphrodisiac is rose.
Okay.
So in Ayurveda, they use the rose plant and especially the rose petals. It actually has a direct effect on the heart chakra. So if you eat it as a medicine or you make a tea out of it, the rose has effects also that are antidepressant and also relaxing.
But again, you'd need quite a concentrated...
The oil, you need the proper oil, not this. What you find in the shops here is not the real thing. But if you make a medicine out of the petals, it's actually very, very powerful itself.
Wow.
So how would you do that to extract it?
You would take, obviously, insecticide-free roses, you know, and make a tea, like a tablespoon.
Another good reason to grow your own roses.
Your own food.
And
then make a tea and then just consume it as a tea.
Well, we have to also think, you said, Jonty, about myth. Why do people put on their, you know, on their first night of their marriage, rose petals? Or when you go to a romantic suite or chalet, they put rose petals. This must be something deeper than propaganda.
Yeah. I think a lot of those things are often associations that we don't consciously know. And so like when people drink rooibos and they feel good, or, you know, they do these things, there's actually a scientific rationale why they're doing it.
And people have been doing this for so long. It's been part of so many different cultures for so long that nobody really kind of remembers where and why it started.
But the point is that there is an effect and that people know that there is an effect. So even unconsciously.
And also the looks, when you look at a rose, when you look at orchids, when you look at all this it's actually stimulating to look at. This ylang ylang that I'm looking at right now, it actually has, I saw an amazing TED talk that had to do with the fact that everything in nature is supposed to appeal something, somebody to look at. So if it's an animal, to go to a specific flower and, you know, to be around it and fertilize that flower, you know, or carry it somewhere.
Well, Tamar, exactly. I mean, what's the beauty of plants is that they look quite different to us, but they are so similar to us. In fact, genetically, we are so intertwined.
And they react.
And the fact that some plants make chemicals that resemble serotonin and dopamine.
Oh, God, yeah.
So that when you take a plant, what's amazing, the most, to me, it like even defines spirituality and intimacy, is that if you take a plant and that plant has brain chemicals which then allow you to know yourself even better.
Okay, now you're going into ayahuasca a little bit.
How much more intimate can you get a relationship between something that looks so different, but in fact connects with you so deeply.
And it works in the same neuron paths that you have, which is scary, because I think if people understand that we are so interlinked, we are so connected.
Exactly.
Nature has all the remedy. There is so much there for us. Well,
you know, what I've been saying is that all healing is about connection. So all healing is about connecting the parts of ourselves that we have disconnected from. And a big part of that is our connection to nature, our connection to the world and to everyone else.
Exactly.
That we look at what separates us rather than what joins us. And Terence McKenna, in his book Food of the Gods, you know, which is about psychedelic mushrooms, he talks so much about the impact that our disconnect from nature has had on our psyche as individuals, on our collective psyche, that we've become estranged from our world.
Absolutely.
And we're hell-bent on destruction of the world.
Yes. He was just mentioning at a conference in July, I had the pleasure of meeting Dennis. In fact, he invited me to present on my work on the South African side.
Wow, that's fantastic.
In the 50th anniversary.
So you're a famous oak!
I don't know about being famous, but...
Say yes.
I want to take the work forward of psychoactive plants and get people to understand how important these plants are in terms of knowing who we are. So at this conference, he was talking about how there is this need, exactly that, for interconnection and reconnecting. And... one of the things that I see, like studying culture, because I've also got an anthropological background and I'm just fascinated by how culture works, is that the consumer culture does take us away from our own time, and it rides on fear and desire all the time.
So that, and it disconnects us, by the way, from any plants. It's only chemical.
The consumer culture is that it disconnects us. Well, we don't take time, and we're so stressed that we don't sit in nature anymore. And we don't allow the natural process of connection to happen.
And what you say there is so important, in that it's totally fear-based of not having enough, of what it is that we need, of this constant need for more
exactly.
of comparison, of separation and right. isolation.
Exactly.
And, you know, we've seen this fascinatingly at the moment in young people that are around us. We've seen how technology, particularly the phones, the iPads, are separating these kids from each other, that they don't even know how to talk to each other anymore.
Absolutely.
John T, I was at the Botanical Gardens not a few months ago on a Sunday, and there were a whole crowd of youngsters, and this amazing natural experiment unfolded in front of me, or this phenomena.
The one where I looked, you were out in Roodepoort.
In Roodepoort, Walter Sisulu, Botanical Gardens. I looked at these youngsters, and they were all looking down at their phones in the Botanical Gardens. And what made me realize is that though they're connected, one of the advantages of this technology is that you can connect to the social, the social networks. But they forgot that they were in nature and in the Botanical Garden. And what I realized that day, and what came to my mind, is that what I call artificial technology interface. And then when I walked away from this group, and it was actually quite hard because I felt like, oh my God, I'm the only one who's going to walk off and sit by a tree somewhere, But when I did that and I sank into a meditation there, I realized there is this organic technology, what I call organic technology interface, which is that natural absorbing into nature and then actually becoming aware of yourself, your body. These youngsters were not aware of where they were,
where their body,
or what
is,
their body was, what was happening to their body, which is it's a fascinating.
That's the shamanic journey, because there's an interesting story that says in certain tribes, when you have an illness and you go to the shaman or to the medicine person, they don't ask about your symptoms. They don't ask about what's happening. The questions that they ask are, when did you stop dancing? When did you stop telling your story? And when did you stop connecting with nature?
Right.
And so much healing is in that alone, in that connection. And the more and the deeper we connect with ourselves, the more and the deeper we connect with that. And for me, one of the things is the way that we connect with our world is through sensuality. So what we've done is we've put sensuality in this box that connects it to sex. And essentially, we think sensuality is foreplay. And women want more sensuality than men. And that's what we've done to it. Instead of understanding, we experience our world through sensuality, through sight, through sound, through taste, through touch, through smell. So aphrodisiac, I was thinking about this, is anything that touches something inside of you.
Absolutely.
So you can walk past someone who has an amazing fragrance. And it's like, oh, wow. And that touches something inside of us. That's the aphrodisiac. So all the properties of everything, and yes, they're really important. But when something touches us, that's aphrodisiac. Looking into your lover's eyes, that's aphrodisiac. The feel of their mouth, the feel of their body, sitting in a moment and having an amazing coffee and really tasting the coffee.
Taking it in.
That's aphrodisiac. So the biggest aphrodisiac is actually your heart. Because the more your heart opens, the more love there is.
I agree.
And I've said that the greatest, everything in sex changes when the heart becomes the entry point rather than arousal. So the problem with arousal is that firstly, it has to be in sync with your partner. You both have to be turned on in the same way at the same time. That doesn't always happen. And arousal comes and goes.
Yeah.
When the heart is the entry point, everything in that changes. That's my deep thing for the day.
No, the arousal also connects us again to that stress mode. And it's wonderful to be in that kind of heights that you get, you're really down and heavy and your heart rate gets really, very fast. And you get you get intoxicated with your own passion.
That's right.
So passion becomes something that it's wonderfully strong, but it's also very tricky and limited. It gets you to ejaculation or to a quick clit stimulation orgasm, which actually says, okay, I'm done for today, and you're not building. There's something much more subtle.
There's an interesting thing in terms of something with that. Somebody once gave me a sample of a lube that they had made with THC oil.
I was wondering what happened with
that. So THC oil is extracted from cannabis.
Yeah.
Okay, so talk to us a little bit firstly about that extraction and whatever. Okay. And so the theory was that you spray a little bit on a clit and it's supposed to make it really sensitive. So I did some reading about this because somebody gave me a sample. We haven't tried it. Right. And for some women, apparently it's amazing, and for others it does nothing.
I mean, some of the plants do have what they call sensory excitation, like even garlic.
Mm-hmm.
They've done insect studies where they show that it excites the sensory neurons.
Okay.
So it's quite possible that THC does that. But what you were mentioning earlier is interesting is that what I've noticed with an experience before is that sometimes people take things like wine or drink wine that actually distracts them away from their heart.
Yes.
With lovemaking. I had a personal experience like that where I had this feeling, hold on, this person really wants to drink the wine, but why don't we even have to have wine? Mm. Why can't we be each other's aphrodisiac?
Yeah.
And so I think a lot of people are using, especially the more tamasic, they call it in Ayurveda, the more ground, like the more heavy substances like wine.
Like wine or cannabis or joints. Cannabis, yeah.
Mm-hmm. To actually lose themselves in love, sex.
Yeah.
Or lovemaking.
Oh, I've seen it everywhere. I've seen it. People, so John T, yeah. The first person to say no.
No, that's an opinion.
I'm becoming quite anti-alcohol from so many different ways, from so many different perspectives. I think it is one of the most destructive forces in our world. Mm. And the fact that people cannot actually function socially without alcohol.
Yeah.
And there's some really interesting stuff about the spiritual effects of alcohol.
Right.
Of how destructive it actually is.
If you look at alcohol and understand how much aggression it actually provokes.
And you think about like people who smoke weed, for example, there's so much peace and calm.
They are, but again, they can be also numb. Sometimes they can't feel that subtle.
I think it's a lot about intention.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, if you take away weed from a peace-loving hippie, you're going to get aggro.
Yeah.
You know?
That's very true.
So I think that it's really about intention. Like, a while ago, I also thought about alcohol a lot, about personal experiences I've had with alcohol. And I've had very beautiful rituals with alcohol, with a special bottle of wine. I had an amazing heart-based experience with someone. And then other times when I've not respected the alcohol, I've realized it's taken me to a very primal, aggressive state. So I think it's like any substance, it has its own spirit. And maybe the problems we have with alcohol is that we don't respect the spirit of alcohol.
I have an idea that alcohol takes us to a place of lowering our defenses.
I don't think we respect the spirit of a lot of things.
We don't.
You know, because when I was involved in some of the sex clubs, a lot of people would do things that they would only do with a level of alcohol, with a level of inebriation. They would not do stone cold sober.
Exactly.
And my thing was always, if you're going to do it with absolute awareness and consciousness and presence.
That's what I meant, yeah. I've had experiences where the partner was trying to get away from the heart by drinking the wine and, you know, distracting.
And
it
takes you out of presence.
Out of presence, absolutely.
Absolutely.
I agree.
What is the effect of the psychoactive plants on sexuality? I mean, it's a very broad question because they have different properties and do different things.
Well, As I said, the excitatory action does have psychoactive effects in terms of increasing your arousal because of blood pressure changes, because of its stimulatory properties on the cardiovascular system, on the heart, etc. So you do have those subtle kind of psychoactive effects, which can be actually not that subtle. Like if you have enough cacao, you will feel really heart opened and want to connect with people.
I'm going
to
have a really fuck it moment here. This is a serious moment. So a couple of weeks ago, last week I did an interview on Gareth's show about the ayahuasca experiences I've had. So that put me in a very different box, and it put me in a different space. So I'm going to be very different here. I've had some experiences with psychedelic mushrooms, with psilocybin mushrooms. And we are starting to experiment with how we can integrate that with the work that I do, which is really fascinating because of the healing properties. And the fact that these are now being used in microdoses for depression, for anxiety, for opening new thought patterns. And I have to say that for me, mushrooms are an incredibly sexual and sensual plant.
Right.
Because of the consciousness properties or the expansion?
Both. Because of the sensation.
Ah, sensation as well.
And because that they open doors. Okay. I saw aspects of myself, of my sexual self, through these plant experiences that I have never acknowledged before. And I've gone really deeply into my own sexuality. And they took me to places within myself that surprised the fuck out of me of things that I thought, oh, wow, that were really challenging, some of them, but incredibly beautiful. And aspects of myself to express that are in a very, very different way to the other expressions of my sexuality. Right.
And one way that I think that they do work to do that, the commonality between ayahuasca, San Pedro, mushrooms, all these plants, is that because they mimic serotonin most of the time, other than San Pedro that mimics noradrenaline, is that they lock into a particular set of serotonin receptors, which causes an unusual stimulation of the limbic system.
Okay.
And the limbic system governs emotions and vision. This is why they are able to take you very deeply into your own heart space, because they actually stimulate the limbic system, which then gives you that vision and inner vision.
Inner vision and completely different emotions.
Allows you to see who you are, what's going on with you. So they're kind of internal mirrors in that way. Mm. Yes, they can give you visions of all around you and, you know, the greater universe, which is another thing. But from my own experiences with ayahuasca and the journey I've been on with the plants is that it took me from being out there, very transcendental, more and more to the truth of my own heart space and my own shadow and my own stuff.
So that's the thing that ayahuasca has done for me, is it really confronts you with yourself.
It sure as hell does.
And
yes, as I've had experiences where it took me to the cleanest every time. In fact, lately,
but that,
it takes me through the mud until it says, well, can you see? Can you see what's the actual story here?
Yeah, what you're doing, how you're doing it.
Stern teacher, but ultimately loving, I believe, yeah.
Yeah. Well, when you surrender to it and when you can see that, that's when you can actually heal it. That's when you can do something with it and change it. And that's huge. And the opening and the heart connection with that is incredible. Because you really see your connection to something that's so much more.
Right.
And, you know, it's very interesting. We, most of us on journeys, are looking for meaning in life.
Mm.
That's what we're looking for, whatever that meaning might be. And we look for that in quite a small way, because we look for that in our own personal lives.
Or for experience.
And very often we look for that outside of ourselves. So we look for it through experience. The purpose of life actually, firstly, is to have the experience, because that's the meaning. You honor yourself by having the experience. Within you, these nerves, these muscles, these cells, everything that's about these receptors, you honor that by expressing it, and you express it through experience. You express it through tasting, through touching, through loving, through talking, through laughing, but with conscious engagement. That's where we find the meaning, is when we're conscious with that. Because then we're expressing the fullness of it. We're allowing ourselves to go and see the connections with it. The bigger picture, and this comes from Tom Chi, is that everything that we express contributes to life and the furthering of life. When I love and when I open my heart, it opens the possibility for there to be more heart opening. And we're putting that out in the world. When I have really deep, amazing sex, it's opening the energy of more deep and amazing sex in the world for everybody, for life. And I say that's why it's so important for people to have the experiences, to go to ceremonies, to come to workshops, because we're making that possible for everybody else. So we're expanding the frequency of that, of possibility, of growth, of love, of pleasure, for everybody in the world.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I agree completely. However, with the plants, you know, it's becoming more fashionable now. And there's it has to be realized that the strong acting psychoactives, the ayahuascas, are very powerful tools that, if not used in a protected space or, you know...
Oh, yeah, the setting, there is the setting pollution, so important.
Energetic pollution can really damage a person.
And holding the space, you know, so the people create really the space.
Your own feeling of going into ceremony is the most crucial. You have to trust yourself. If you do not feel like you should be doing it, do not do it. That's my what I've learned from my own experiences. But what I've also learned, Jonty, is that low doses of the plants, especially the mushrooms, like also 1 gram, and looking in the mirror is some of the most powerful psychoanalytical experiences I've had was with myself. 1 gram of mushrooms, looking in the mirror, and you just see the truth. Your heart feels, in fact, your heart feels the truth, and you know what it is.
Yeah. So we were talking earlier about a guy called Gabor Maté, who is a Canadian. He's a physician, is that right? Or a psychiatrist?
He's a doctor, a physician. Okay. Yeah.
And firstly, the one thing that you have to watch about him is, or that he has put on YouTube, is a talk. It's a 3 or 4 minute talk on what's normal, on what normality is. And that's fascinating because it really challenges a lot of the perceptions that we have. But he is experimenting amazingly with microdosing of substances for depression, for anxiety, for addiction, of a lot of the psychoactive substances.
Something that I go into my online courses that, and from my own experience, is that there is also, I think, a growing idea that microdosing is very gentle and very okay. Mm. I actually have cautions about that, in that sometimes microdosing can open you as much as in a ceremony space.
Okay.
And if you just go out into normal...
Tweeting the Gabor Maté talk, yeah?
Into normal spaces, you can lose the realization that you are actually still very open. So, you know, microdosing needs to be respected, that
respected
it's a very
as
powerful
well.
Opener. Yeah. It's not so that it's just uplifting the mood. You're actually opening your energetic body.
So the same thing as if you're going to take, for example, allopathic medication, you really need a guide for this. You really need somebody who knows what they're doing, who can advise you.
That's important. I think it's an important message. People are listening now. Even me, that I know that you are, Jonty is 100%. You know, he takes full responsibility for what he does, the way he treats himself, first of all, and do this exploration. I'm sure you're doing the same. People need to understand this is something needs to be with somebody who's walked the path.
Right. Yeah. And you need a teacher. To
a mentor, take you through a guide.
That. I mean, I had once a substance that was 9 drops of it was an amalgamated thing with all sorts of things, but it had iboga in it. I had 9 drops. It catalyzed, even though it was microdosing, it catalyzed an intense opening. For 2 months, I actually went on a process from 9 drops of something. So the idea that microdosing is less powerful or maybe less potent needs to be cautioned.
Well, the homeopathic principle is sometimes the lower the dose, the more powerful the impact it has.
Exactly.
Yeah. Tell us, what is your website, John?
It's Phytoalchemy. So it's Phyto, alchemy.co.za. And I just launched now online courses 2 weeks ago.
Tell us a little bit about those.
So basically, it's been quite a journey. I've condensed a lot of what I know into these courses. There's an introductory course on food as medicine, which explains like kind of the fundamental
principles.
So you
do it online?
Yeah. So it's all preloaded on the site. You can then do the courses and redo the courses as and when you want.
Uh-huh.
So the beauty of the courses is that the food as medicine is it gives you that fundamental knowledge of how plants can be used as food to treat lifestyle diseases, to prevent lifestyle diseases, and also how to detox the body. So understanding the role of nutrients and plant medicines in healing.
Super.
Then I've moved into more specialized fields of how the psychoactive plants work in neurobiology, how they have effect on the parasympathetic nervous system, and how that, you know, all the kind of understandings of what they actually do for a person. So interconnectivity, etc. And then I have a really fantastic course, which I think is going to be very useful for people who want to embark on in ceremony, but have a lot of questions. Mm. It's the major visionary plant. So I go through each plant, how it's used traditionally. It's how to prepare it. It's contraindications, you know, how to the shamanic healing and what the shaman, how the shaman heals. So very, very, like frequently asked questions kind of guide, online course guide, which is, I think, incredibly useful for people who don't know too much about the plants and, you know, who have trepidations about it.
You know, this is really personal and deep sharing for me, is that for a lot of my life, I was very anti a lot of these plants. I never understood them and I never understood their role. Hmm. I always had friends who were experimenting, who were journeying, who were exploring, and I never understood it. It never resonated with me. Hmm. Chantal came into my life. She stepped into my world, and it became important for me to step into her world.
Right.
And it really has changed my consciousness. So to everybody who might be listening to this, with whatever fears you have, never say never. And just be aware of the possibilities that are out there. Mm. That everything in our world, everything on our planet has a purpose. It has a resonance. Not everything is for everybody. Not every journey is for everybody. But simply be aware of the possibilities that exist, whether it's body work, whether it's plant work, whether it's with your sexuality, whatever your path is, there is a path for you. Open your heart to what is there, because the beauty of life is mind-blowing beyond what we thought. And as an explorer of consciousness, which I've been for a long time, more and more I see possibilities in that, and it's mind-blowing. So
yeah.
Firstly, thank you really for being with us this morning. Yeah. This is such a huge discussion, and we're definitely going back to it again.
One closing statement to echo that is that most of the things we put in our body and what we do affects how we think, feel, and act. Mm. Choose how you want to think, feel, and act by all the things you put in your body.
Can we find us information in your website of what blocks our energy fields, what makes us numb, what makes us not to think, not to be open energetically?
I do write a lot of my thoughts down in the blogs.
Because that's a big thing.
So
all this Coca-Cola, high sugar doses, empty carbs, no nutritionists, no enzymes.
I do cover that in the Food as Medicine.
Okay.
So the principles of healing. So the Food as Medicine course also also contains the what I call the fundamental principles of holistic medicine and health, which we can use in our diversity, relationship, awareness, and process.
So go and visit John's website. It's fascinating stuff, and we're going to come back to
I'm also offering discounts. So if anybody wants to know,
we're sure they're going to find them.
There is an amazing special all-launch discount for 2017 only, which I'm giving an amazing discount just because of,
So go and visit the website.
It's tweeted.
So I've just received a message from my friend Christos, because we were looking for one more date for a water massage for December.
And?
Because what we did last week was so deep. So we said, can we do one more? 19th of December, you are invited as my
guest. Amazing.
I would love for you to be there and experience this. 19th of December.
That'll be wonderful. Thank you.
Iphiphallic. Iphiphallic is a statue or an illustration with an erection.
Ah.
But like stating or erection?
No, erection.
Okay.
So it's a picture or a statue with an erection. That states it. It is there.
It's there.
It is there. Wow. This has been fascinating. And
thank you so much,
Shanti.
It's been a pleasure.
Beautiful sharing. Thank you.
Thank you.
And it's a topic we will come back to again.
Definitely.
So we will definitely have you here again.
Thanks.
I wish you all so much pleasure.
This is CliffCentral.com.